doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case loving you. No pills gonna cure my head. I got a...
Well, here's a health trend to be aware of. The New York Times has reported on a study that obesity can spread from friend to friend like a virus. The Times article was inspired by a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which followed more than 12,000 people for 32 years. So quite a large body of evidence behind these findings, so to speak, I guess. The evidence gathered over the course of the Framingham Heart Study pointed to the powerful impact of social networks, friends, friends of friends, and family members. The fact that obesity could be spread, so to speak, like the common cold, inspired us to call on Mary Henson, a certified dietitian at University Hospital. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Well, so the researchers in the study documented that when one person becomes obese, then the friends of that person are more likely to become obese, and so are the friends of their friends. So it shows that that happens, but research to date doesn't explain why. Do you have any ideas on why?
Oh, I mean, I have some input on it. I think the most important thing to notice is that this is one study that it's studying social networks. There are so many different factors in this. And of course, you know, people tend to gather in different networks, and people who eat together eat a lot of the same foods.
Let's talk for a moment about what a social network is, just to make sure that our listeners understand. You're talking about friends,
family,
people who we spend time with socially. We chat with them, we go to church with them, we go to school with them, go
and
to work
so
with
many
them.
Social functions revolve around food.
Yes, they do.
So people tend to influence each other's food choices, which makes sense. But when you're talking about obesity, which is already a really sensitive subject, I think it's important to note for practitioners and the media to really be careful with this subject and tread lightly on it, because what we don't want to do is further socially isolate the overweight and obese people in our country. Mm-hmm. They're already feeling isolated. They're already discriminated against. And just to throw this one more wrench, you know, in their day and say, you know, I don't want to be friends with you because you're obese and I might become obese too, is just not the way that we want to take this. We want to see this as a message that says people need to become more conscious of what a healthy food portion is and enable each other to choose the healthy choices when eating out and not use eating out as an excuse to overeat.
Well, let's take this now and try to make a practical application out of it, okay? We were having a conversation earlier and talking about you go out with one group of friends and they tend to order healthy things. They order salads or they order something that's good for them or has decent portions. Or you go out with another group of friends and they tend to order all those things that we know we shouldn't be eating, you know, the fried things and the burgers and the things like that. So how can we actually say tailor our behavior to the group we're with? Can we affect them? Or do we have to be afraid of them affecting us?
You know, I think we all just need to remember that we are our own person regardless of our environment, and that you can make good decisions even when everyone around you isn't. You just can't let it be an excuse to eat the wrong foods. And of course, when you're in a group of people eating healthy, you don't want to be the one person to order that hamburger and french fries. But on the other end of it, it's still possible to make healthy food choices, and you may get some flack from your friends, but it's also because they want to see their friends be the same size as them. I really feel that a lot of my patients, I work with bariatric patients, and they struggle with this when they get their surgery and they go out to eat with their friends, and their friends give them a really hard time about how they're not eating anymore.
Really?
But they got the surgery to become healthier, and it's really a struggle for them to continue to socialize with these people who are giving them this peer pressure. But then eventually sometimes they start to lose weight and start to look good, and their friends become interested in, and I think you can make that shift for be the influence in your group of friends to make them start making healthier food choices.
Well, I know that when I go out for dinner, I look at those menus and all of those things that I know I shouldn't be eating are so tempting. It's easy to say, oh, just this one time. And, you know, what kinds of tools? Can you give us any ideas for things we can do when we go out, when we look at those very tempting menus, when our friends are ordering things that aren't? What are some tools that we can actually use?
One thing I would suggest is don't go hungry to a restaurant. Don't be starving hungry. I mean, I'm not saying eat a full meal before you leave, but just check your hunger level before you leave the house and maybe have half a glass of skim milk or, you know, something small, a piece of fruit before you leave the house, so that by the time you get to the restaurant, you're not starving hungry when you're looking at that menu.
Okay.
Have a glass of water before your meal begins, and then really take the time to look at the menu. Enjoy the socialization of being out with your friends and not the fact that you're all out here focusing on food.
Okay. Focus on the conversation instead of on the
plate. Focus on the conversation. Mm-hmm. You can always order an extra side of vegetables and cut your meal in half every single time you go out. Doesn't matter if you're making a healthy choice or choosing the worst thing on the menu. For women, I usually recommend cut your meal into 3 portions right away before you even start eating off that plate.
Okay.
And try only to eat a third of that portion. For men, I usually let them have 2.
Okay.
Because they can take in a little more.
Are you suggesting then that we should ask for the doggy bag before we even start
eating?
That
is a really good idea. Okay. If you can cut the food in half and just eat half or a third of it and leave the rest or take the rest home, then yes. But if you continue to pick off that plate while you're talking, it's probably better to get it in a doggy bag right away. Out of sight, out of mind.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to be full on that one third of that meal.
Yeah, because if it's not in front of you, mm-hmm. you probably won't eat it.
You won't eat it.
You won't make the effort, and you won't make a big deal about going after more.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Maybe avoid buffet restaurants.
Yes. Yes, because you have that mentality right when you walk into the buffet that I'm going to get my $6.95 worth or however much it costs.
Uh-huh.
You want to get your money's worth. And I think a lot of people feel that way about food. They want to get their money's worth instead of focusing on the fact that the food tastes good or, you know, the health factor of the food. They just want quantity.
Maybe, too, we should be looking at other things to do with our friends besides just going out to eat. You know,
yes.
Especially this time of year, we can be outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things we can do. Other activities, taking a walk with them or playing putt-putt or...
There are so many things. Going for walks is, you know, it's a great idea to get people in a social circle where you go and you exercise. You see it in the mall all the time. You see it in the parks. People are doing it, and it's something to think about with your group of friends. What can we do besides focus on food?
Absolutely. Your final word of advice, we have to think about this now. I mean, that was 12,000 people, and that was a lot of people
mm-hmm.
studied. So I have to think there really is some substance to the results. But I really liked your advice, too, about don't start avoiding people who are obese. Tell us that one again, because I think that's very important.
Yeah, and I really think as a healthcare provider myself, there are a lot of studies that show that people in healthcare discriminate against their patients who are overweight and obese. And so this study is just more fuel for that fire. And I think we really need to be careful, especially being in the media, to promote acceptance with whether, regardless of somebody's weight, they're a good person either way. And
mm-hmm.
so don't just feel like I can't be friends with this person who's overweight. Now this study came out saying that I'm going to become overweight too.
Yeah, because that's not really what it means at all.
Right, exactly.
Very good. Well, Mary Henson, registered dietitian from University Hospital, thank you. You've helped us understand behind this headline even more.
Thanks, Tricia.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. What Punxsutawney Phil does in his burrow, or change one small thing and change your life big time or small time, whatever you want. Winter's coming, the days are getting shorter and shorter. We crawl into our burrows like Punxsutawney Phil, our favorite groundhog, who tells us on February 2nd how much longer winter will be. What if we could add 6 hours to our day to do anything we want with? What if there'd also be a good chance we'd sleep better, have stronger legs, better posture, get smarter, have more sex, even lose a few pounds? Now, if you're like me, your day's already packed to the max. Just doesn't seem like there's a second to spare. Well, now, here's a radical idea, outside the box for sure. You probably know we Americans average more than 6 hours of tube a day. Now, I can already hear us thinking, I can't stop watching TV. We got a bunch of company. A recent survey found a lot of people would rather watch TV than have sex. Now, that's a pretty powerful force in our lives. I want to know what channel they're watching. So how do we change something that powerful? First, we have to see some real positive in changing. We don't usually do anything different unless the benefit outweighs the cost by at least 2 to 1. So let's imagine some ways our days would really be better if we had the time. Chatting with our friends, visiting family, fixing up the house, going for a walk, playing Scrabble, reading that book we were supposed to read in 10th grade but got the Cliff Notes for instead. I hear Moby Dick is really good. The real test, though, is when we're just about to do the same old, same old. Mindlessly, we're walking toward the family room, picking up the remote, about to plop down for a long winter's night of stuff we won't remember 10 minutes later. If we set a little obstacle between us and the old habit, now, we don't have to sell the TV, just something to give the noodle a chance to consider what we're about to do, and to consider taking the fork in the road toward what we really want if we're not a slave to the habit. Something easy. Leave the TV unplugged all the time so we have to plug it in again. Or stuff the remote under the couch pillow. Anything to give us a chance to think. Do I really want to watch the Seinfeld I've seen twice already? Or would I rather do a little canoodling with my sweetie pie? Whatever we do instead, we'll have company. At the very least, I'm sure Puxatawny Phil isn't watching Animal Planet on his 40-inch HD. He's probably canoodling with Mrs. Puxatawny. I hear she's pretty cute. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.